This is the Central Scrutinizer. We're working very hard to spend your tax money to keep you from hearing things like freedomfiends.com. That's why we're very upset about freedomfiends.cz. Freedomfiends.cz is a Liberty Media archive of Freedom Fiends material hosted in the Czech Republic. Freedomfiends.cz is outside the jurisdiction of the Watchers, who employ me, the Central Scrutinizer, to keep you from hearing things that might make you think. My fellow scrutinizers and I do not want you to visit freedomfiends.cz. Do not visit freedomfiends.cz.
Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Welcome to the Vaporsmith's Freedom Hour with Freedom Fiends, Michael W. Dean.
Broadcasting from my windowless bunker.
And Nima Vadadi.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
Roland.
Hello, Nima.
Hello, Michael. How you doing, man?
I'm feeling well. How are you?
Not too bad. Just fiending it up, enjoying the beautiful spring weather, drinking some energy drinks and puffing on a Vaporsmith. So what you up to?
Puffing on a Vaporsmith's and reflecting on Santorum dropping out of the race.
Reflective Santorum. That sounds like a good name for a band.
Yeah. Not my
band. It'd be a Guar style band, and they'd spray Santorum out of big shotguns.
You ever been to a Guar show?
I've never been to a Guar show. I've heard disgusting things, though.
I've been to several Guar shows. I'm friends with Dave Brocky, the singer and co-creator of Guar. Guar actually started as a sort of side project of a band called Death Piggy. Death Piggy, in the middle of their set, would throw on costumes and do two or three Guar songs, and people ended up liking that better than Death Piggy. And then the guitarist in Death Piggy, or was it the drummer, one of them stabbed somebody and went to prison, so they just started, that's fucking rock and roll, man. I mean, damn.
I said
we weren't going to cuss, man.
Well, you screwed it up in the first 1 minute. Good job.
1 minute. I know, man. We're trying to sell out and go mainstream and get on XM Radio.
Yeah, it's a tightrope walk. You want to be effing rock and roll, but we also want to be, I don't know, for some reason, not cussing.
Yeah, I know. It's like, why bother?
Why?
I know. If someone really wants us, they could like hire someone to sit there and press the delay button.
There you go.
Yeah, Guar, man. Guar. You know, I have a scar on my forehead where the singer in Guar hit me in the head with a bass guitar. I had 3 stitches at a show.
Sounds like a freaking rap song.
Death Piggy show.
You got a Guar scar from a guitar?
Yeah, from a bass guitar. Those are bigger. Bass guitars are good because you can hit people with them and they don't break usually. And when you hit people with guitars, they usually break, I have found.
I see. I'm glad you have that news you can use for us, Michael.
Yeah. So I've been watching this show called, I guess we could just skip over Santorum.
No, let's not skip over Santorum. I think Santorum's kind of important. And plus, I'm curious. I took my dog to the vet, and he was on MSNBC or whatever.
And your dog was spewing Santorum, and so you had to take him to the vet because of that?
Yes, that's why my dog was at the vet. He was coughing up Santorum. No, disgusting. But yeah, they were saying he was suspending his campaign, and he got up there and was going on and on about his sweater vest, and I was thinking, I don't understand what this has to do with anything, Rick. So I didn't really get a sense of what he was doing. Like, the pundits before it, or the talking heads before it, were questioning whether or not he's going to endorse Romney, and how strong of an endorsement it's going to be, and what's going to happen to his delegates. Did you get a sense of any of that through this whole
saga? I turned it off and went and masturbated. not because he didn't turn me on. It was like, you know, just something to do other than watch Fox News.
Yes, yes. Watching porn is always better than listening to Santorum.
Ugh, yeah, Santorum, you know, I mean, they're all the same and they're all evil, but some are more evil than others. And, you know, I mean, we're left with, like, Romney, who's a gun grabber, and Obama, who's a gun and everything else grabber. But I am pleased that Santorum dropped out. I mean, I have nothing against Christians, but I have something against Christian Sharians, you know, people that want to, like, enforce all the, like, I wanted to outlaw porn, speaking of porn. You know, I mean, his whole worldview is based on a book that's written, you know, when, what is it they say, when a wheelbarrow would have been a vast improvement in the current technology.
Yeah, yeah, I don't want to hate on theology too much. I just feel like, out of all of them, you know, all the politicians, you know, I try not to be a violent person, but Rick Santorum just makes me want to punch him as hard as I can in the face for some reason. And
you better not say that, man.
Not saying I'd ever act on that. I'm just saying that's the feeling I get whenever I see him.
He makes me want to punch a kitten.
Eee.
I'm kidding.
Poor kitten.
Oh, I know. I never would. I'd punch people that want to punch kittens. But
yeah. I think Rick Santorum probably wants to punch kittens.
I don't know, man. I think that any time someone wants to vote for Santorum, a kitten dies. God kills a kitten.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that guy, he was just, he's so twisted, man. He's like, I couldn't believe how much traction he got. He's like something from the 1940s, you know?
Well, that's why he got traction. I mean, you think of your average Republican voter is over 50, probably over like 60 or 70.
Hey, my dad's going to turn 91 soon, and he's voting for Ron Paul.
Well, congratulations.
But then he was also telling me about what today about why it's a problem that our president's a Muslim.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you're old and you just don't know any better. I just feel like if you think Barack Obama's a Muslim, then you don't know very much about things.
He's a secular humanist who thinks that politics should be the ultimate god, you know? He thinks the UN should be God.
Who, Barack?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't worship Allah. He worships
power. He worships the state.
Yeah, man. God gets in the way of his plans.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Although he'll act like he's a Christian when it wins him some points for some reason, which they all do.
Yeah, didn't he have like 7 prayer breakfasts the day he got sworn in
to something like
prove
that.
He wasn't a Muslim or something? Yeah. He doesn't care about Jesus or Allah or any of that. He wants to be God.
Yeah. I think he thinks he is God. I mean, look at all the stuff he tries to do. Look at the NDAA. Look at him. I mean, how much more of a God complex do you have to be the person who just pushes a button and somebody evaporates or vaporizes off the face of the earth?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the kind of power that Barack Obama has.
Yeah.
And he doesn't try to cede that power. He embraces it and he tries to seize as much more of it as he can. I mean, there's not much more left, but he's grabbing at it as much as he can.
Have we covered the Supreme Court decision that now cops can strip search you for anything?
I think we did a little bit, yeah, in one of the live shows.
It's like now the state can arrest you for nothing, indefinitely detain you without arresting you, kill you without a trial, and arrest you for protesting, and make you strip down naked.
Yeah.
That's like the past 3 months, man.
And drone you out of nowhere, although I guess that had been around for
a
while.
That. Yeah, I covered but that.
I think John Stewart put it pretty funnily when he said, you know, and it was the conservative judges on the Supreme Court who all voted for this, and he thought, doesn't big government feel biggest when it's inside of your anus?
Well, the TSA wants to be in your anus, and that's Barack has. I don't even want to mention the left or right. It's all the same crap, man.
Yep.
It's all the same thing. It's all the same thing. But Santorum had a special place in hell, and I'm glad he's going to go be a family guy.
Blech.
He can go lord over his family and not lord over me.
Yeah, well, hopefully his family leaves him. I don't understand how he still has a wife, but I guess some people are into masochism.
When he was resigning, his daughter, the one that's not sick, was standing behind him and looking at him with, like, doe-eyed adulation. Mm. You know, he got him young. He brainwashed him.
Probably. Well, at least we're rid of him. I mean, I don't know what's next for Santorum, but I'm sure it's not anything important.
Lecture circuit. I've been watching something fun. Here's a good antidote to Santorum. Did you ever see a cartoon show called Home Movies?
Yeah. It's
It's the guy who created
Brandon Small, same guy who does Metalocalypse, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. It was his first show. It's basically the main character is him as an 8-year-old. It's a character named Brandon Small who's a filmmaker. It's really cute. I like it a lot. Music's really good, too.
Yeah, and the guy who does the soccer coach is the same guy who voices that Archer show you really like.
Yeah, and it's like, it's basically the same guy. I mean, it's basically, they said, I think someone said, what would happen if Coach McGurk, instead of being like fat and ugly and unlikable, what if we just took that same personality and made him like really good looking and rich and powerful, but still that kind of asshole?
Yeah, I don't know. I never really took to Archer. I guess I could give it another chance, but he also voices Bob in Bob's Burgers, which is a pretty hilarious show.
That's a
where
cute
he's more
show.
Of a average Joe kind of guy who owns a burger restaurant in New York.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen it?
Yep. I like it. I like Bob's Burgers. I like that the girl always wears bunny ears. That's cute and weird.
Yeah. She's hilarious.
Yeah. So somebody shot a cop car in Florida. In the town where Trayvon Martin was killed.
Huh. Like, are people saying, or is the press saying that it's related to Trayvon Martin?
They're saying it's almost definite. There was nobody in the cop car at the time, but I'm glad I don't live in Florida right now.
Yeah, seriously. It seems like, from everything I've been reading, like, the racial tensions seem to be getting higher and higher, and it's just people who've always sort of played this card just trying to use this to their advantage to push for more whatever. I don't even know.
There's people saying that the Obama administration is trying to fuel the fires of racial unrest because they think it'll give them a higher voter turnout.
Ah, since white guilt is pretty much what got him elected in the first place, maybe they're trying to restoke those old flames.
Yeah, and historically, black people don't vote.
Yeah, is that true? Black people just don't vote?
Compared to white people, yeah. But they do now.
Good for them. I mean, why don't we all take a cue from that community and just not vote?
Yeah.
I didn't vote for Ron Paul in the primary. I guess maybe I should have. But
well, my state didn't have a primary vote.
Caucus.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a caucus at the same place they have the gun show.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I didn't go. It would have been ridiculous.
Yeah, I think my time spent promoting liberty is best spent with the fiends than standing in line to be turned away like people were where I live.
I know. Yeah, it was, and Wyoming overwhelmingly voted for Santorum.
Ugh, I know. Really?
That's where I live, man.
Oh, man.
That's my neighbors.
Yeah, well, at least they leave you alone. I mean, they want to vote for people that are going to F with you, but, I mean, you seem to not have any busybody neighbors yet that have tried to rain on your parade, right?
Not yet. Not at all. No, my neighbors are mellow. I don't know. Someone's moving in across the street finally. I don't know who they are, but we'll see. Yeah, the house has been empty for like a year.
Yeah. Maybe I'll come move in and we can dig tunnels to each other's basements and have our
we could
true
podcast.
Freedom Fiends
bunker. We could podcast with a tin can and a thread.
There we
string.
Go.
Well,
excellent.
You should. You should have, but I think the house has been sold.
Ah, yeah. Bummer.
Yeah.
Oh, well. I'll be in Texas trying to dodge the drones.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
So what do we got here in the notes? We got some tyranny last year.
We do have tyranny last year. That segment we were trying to do, you know, a lot of times we'll spit out some tyranny and just forget about it. But Tyranny doesn't go away. It's important to know. I mean, I guess part of the thing is we just get worse and worse tyranny as time goes on. But it's important to look back and see what led us up to this point. So what do we have here in our tyranny last year for today, which is kind of confusing?
Well, citizen ticketed for directing traffic after police failed to in South Pasadena, California. There was a traffic accident, and the traffic lights were out. And, you know, cars were almost crashing into each other, and some good Samaritan got out and started directing traffic. And finally, the police got off their ass and showed up, and they ticketed the guy for doing their job.
Wow. Yeah, they they have that much desire to be the real monopoly that they, if you try to do something, they're going to ticket you. Because they wanted to do it. Reminds me of, like, unions, you know?
The police would rather have nobody directing traffic and having people crash than having a citizen try to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Disgusting. Yeah, did unions, the guy fight it? I mean, is there any kind of follow-up on it, or?
Nah. A friend of mine that worked in Hollywood told me something about unions. He said that he was on a shoot one time, and he was doing catering, and there were a bunch of movie lights sitting out after they finished the shoot, and it started to rain really quickly, and the movie union people were, like, out getting the trucks to bring the stuff, and the catering people were just like, well, we'll just help out here, and they started to, like, cover these lights up with some of their, like, big plastic tablecloths to protect the lights until the guys got back.
Yeah.
And someone from, like, some union rep came up and yelled at him and uncovered the lights and let the lights, you know, $100,000 worth of lights get destroyed. Ugh. Rather than let someone from a different, you know, from not from that union improvise and help out.
Yeah, yeah. It's just disgusting, and it shows how economically unviable things like unions or any kind of centrally planned work is just. It prevents work from being done. Like, this was already done. It was going to be done free of charge. These guys were just helping out. The work needed to be done. People were just doing it. The union goes in and screws everything up. They want to save little tidbits of work to give out to their favored people. Whereas in free world, you know, or lib pair, when there's work that needs to be done, somebody does it. And if they want payment, then they ask for it. If not, then hey, good deed.
I actually had an experience of my own. Kind of like that. I was temping in San Francisco, and it was really, really cold in this office I was working in. And the lady at the next desk had a cold. She was really sick, but she was coming to work anyway because she couldn't afford not to. And I had called the building maintenance people for 3 days in a row and asked them to come up and adjust the thermostat. And the thermostat was on the wall behind me, but it was covered with, like, a plastic thing, so you couldn't do anything with it, and it had, like, a special kind of union key to open it up. And they did not come up after 3 days of asking every day for them to come up. Yeah. So I just took a dime and used it as a screwdriver and opened the thing up and changed the thermostat, and I almost got fired for it. They got really pissed. They're like, you're not in the union, you're not allowed to touch that.
Yeah. So I'm just gonna have to sit here in the burning heat and feel ridiculous and be less productive.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to let me take care of something that I can take care of, but because the union's going to get their panties in a wad, we can't do it.
I think that's where a lot of hackers get their motivation. You know, people that aren't necessarily out to destroy things, but just want to poke around in other people's systems. It's like they can see the ridiculousness of problems with systems, and they just go, well, I can go around this.
Yeah, yeah. They're trying to keep you on your toes and make it better. Maybe.
Yep.
I don't know.
Maybe.
Well, we also had a don't talk to police thing during our live show where the woman got a $12,000 restaurant tip, called the police, and they basically took it away, saying it was drug money. They eventually gave it back to her. But
She had to get a lawyer. She had to get a lawyer to get it back.
She had to get a lawyer, which was a pretty big never talk to police story. But there was another pretty big one that I had read about. Will Grigg wrote about this. Apparently in Denver, there was this young man. I think he was some kind of immigrant from Africa. He was driving with some friends at night, and some dudes went and threatened him. You know, were brandishing guns, yelling at him, following them. So they drove out of town. They got away. They were outside of the Denver city limits. They called police, or they called 911, which maybe you shouldn't do in certain situations or ever. And the dispatcher told them to go back to where the incident happened. And they really didn't want to. They were like, no, there were people there pointing guns at us. We don't want to go back. And the dispatcher said, the police can't help you unless you go back to the scene of the crime or the location. And then they'll come over there and they'll help you. And after some arguing, the folks eventually did go back to the scene. And the dude ended up getting shot.
When was this?
I read about it last week. We should maybe link it if we want to. It was Will Grigg's last article. So, if you Google Will Grigg.
I'd say, why even call the police once you're away from the people? I think you've done what you're trying to do.
That's my point. Problem already solved. I mean, maybe they were worried for the future. Like, maybe they had some kind of ties to these people, and they were like, well, these people might know where I live, or maybe they'll track me down with my license plate, which is another way the state keeps tabs on you. But if people really want to, they can use it to figure out your information. So, yeah. Another fail on the part of the state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
State. Damn state.
I know, so square. Man. So square.
There was another Never Talk to Police, and this is another one from a year or two ago, but it's been getting some traction because people are bringing it up in light of the Trayvon Martin thing of, like, where's the outrage? Because this was a black man that was shot by the state, and no one even cared or noticed.
Yeah.
And I think
happens a lot.
I think Will Grigg brought this one up, too. It was an old dude who had one of those Med Alert, you know, I've fallen and I can't get up, electronic medallions or, you know, switches around his neck that you call when you're having medical problems. And he was having a heart attack or, you know, heart pains and pressed the button on this thing. The police showed up with the paramedics, banged on his door, and he was like, I'm better now, go away, I'm fine. And they broke down his door, and he didn't know what it was. He'd just been having a heart attack, and he grabbed a knife and jumped up because he thought someone was breaking in his house. Jeez. And the police shot and killed him. So, you know, he's trying to get medical help and ends up getting murdered.
Wow.
And, you know, nobody lost their job. Nobody, there was no problem for it. It just happened.
Yeah, that's pretty horrible. It also makes me feel like, you know, maybe in LibPair there would be an emergency number, you know, similar to 911. But I don't think it would be tied to all three. Maybe there'd be three different ones, you know, one for medical necessity, one for ambulances, and one for police. Because I feel like in a lot of situations now, the cops will show up as well, whatever it is, just because there's so many cops and they're getting paid and they all want to go out and have fun instead of driving around. I'm sure they get off on giving people tickets, but whenever there's an emergency call, maybe they get an extra kick out of that.
Well, I think in LibPair, even if they did have a system where police, fire, and ambulance show up, I don't think the police would be as likely to just shoot you because then nobody'd want to hire that company.
Right. Right.
Free market, baby.
Yeah. Take that.
Hi, I'm Nima Vidotti from the Freedom Fiends podcast, and I'm excited about Vaporsmith's electronic cigarettes. I dig the taste, and I dig the freedom to vape anywhere the nanny staters would wet their pants if I smoked.
Vaporsmiths.com is run by a liberty-loving entrepreneur, not some subsidized tax-eater conglomerate.
I'm Michael Dean of the Freedom Fiends, and I love Vaporsmiths. I smoked 3 packs of tobacco cigarettes a day for decades, but now I'm only using Vaporsmiths. I love the flavors, I don't smell like smoke, and I save money, so I have more to spend on ammo and treats for my kitties.
Available in 4 strengths and 10 delicious flavors. Reds, Classics, Turkish, Menthol, Strawberry, Cherry, Vanilla, Coffee, Minty Mint, and Cloves. Go to Vaporsmiths.com. Use coupon code FREEDOMFIEND to get 25% off your order. This is a limited time offer. Vaporsmiths at Vaporsmiths.com.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. When you're not busy spying on your neighbors or squinting at everyone, tell anyone who will listen why more government is a good thing. You'll get a warm and fuzzy feeling demanding more taxes and arguing in favor of gun control while militarizing our police, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
That is so square. Check out the additional Freedom Fiends show, Freedom Fiends Live, every Sunday on the LRN.FM streaming feed or satellite radio.
Broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker inside a mountain near an undisclosed location in the rural Wild West of the occupied states of America.
Freedom Fiends Live expands on the Fiends weekly Wednesday podcasts, but now we're kicking the hornet's nest live. Talk back to the back talkers every Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. East Coast time. From the makers of Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. Freedom Fiends Live. Call in soon before we get droned.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
So, Nima, you ready for some podcat?
Always ready for podcat, man. Right. Although not as ready as you are. You're podcatting like every day now.
I know. The Anarchy Gumbos is happening. I'm doing another show later today. I'm interviewing Stephanie Murphy from Free Talk Live and Pork Therapy in a couple hours.
Free Talk Live. Yeah, she does a lot of their... She's almost the third host now. I mean, when it's not Mark or Ian, you always hear Stephanie, too.
There's some other gal that's on some days, though. I don't know who's on what days.
Yeah, yeah. I think they switch it up a lot depending on who's around.
Yeah,
that's who's what not I mean. Out getting stoned in the park.
And I mean, I listen to them, but I don't know who's on what days.
Yeah.
It says on Wikipedia that she's only on one day a week, but I know she's on more than one day a week.
Yeah, I think she definitely always does the Sunday show, though.
Yep.
I usually hear her on Sundays. Who's what are you going to be asking her about? All the normal stuff? Anything special planned for her?
I don't know. I think I'm going to ask everybody about BDSM now. That went so well.
Yeah, I'm really curious about her take on that. I think this is the first female you'll be interviewing too, huh?
Yep.
Ah,
yep.
Interesting.
Well, actually, I don't know how much I want to get into it about this, but I want to ask her about it because I exchanged some emails with her a long time ago. Basically, similar complaints to what I had about Stefan Molyneux with her about something she said on her show.
Ah, but she, not on Free Talk Live. That was on her show.
It was actually, no, does, it was right? Actually, I think it was on Dale's show. No, it was on her show, but it was Dale from Flaming Freedom or Prometheus Unchained, and they were both basically saying that BDSM is bad. And I'm like, really? I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be the BDSM guy. I don't want to, you know,
you
be
don't?
Like pigeonholed as that. Although yeah. I used to be. I used to do that podcast with my wife that was the most popular BDSM cast there was for about a year and a half. But, basically what it is, it's like, you know, her and Stefan and Dale all kind of do advice shows on the internet. And it's like, if someone's giving advice that I know from personal experience to be wrong, and they're liberty people, I'm going to tell them why I think they're wrong.
Yeah, definitely.
You know?
I mean... Yeah. You Anything know. Else you're going to be talking to her about? I know she's in medical school, right?
Yeah. And that's another thing. It's like, you know, I want to, if somebody's going to be a doctor, they're going to be giving advice. I don't want them giving bad advice. I don't know. It's like, I just feel like BDSM is normal and healthy and A lot of people don't understand it because it's usually a device in Hollywood movies of like creepy serial killer types. So people have a bad, it has a bad rap. I kind of feel like it's where homosexuality was like 40 years ago. You know, like 40 years ago, if you went to a therapist and said, you know, I think I'm gay, they'd be like, well, that's bad and that's a disease and here's right. what you can
and
do.
You were probably abused by an yeah. older cousin or brother yeah. when you were young, right? Yeah.
Everything things that people like say that. About BDSM, they used to say yeah. about that. I mean, homosexuality was illegal in Texas. I mean, somebody got arrested for butt sex in Texas like 12 years ago.
Well, technically, it was just sodomy, right? I mean, I guess you could have a boyfriend if all you did was hold his hand.
Yeah, and you could probably have been arrested in Texas for having anal butt love with your wife.
Probably. See, again, the state wants the monopoly on anal rape.
That's true. I mean, when they send you to prison.
Can only happen in prison and with taxes.
Yeah, and, you know, people often get raped in prison, and it's kind of part of a prison sentence in a lot of cases. And
oh, yeah.
a lot of people that are on juries or, you know, comment on things like, oh, I hope he goes to jail and gets raped. You know, it's like
yep.
it's part of the horizontal enforcement punishment that people want to enforce on other people.
Oh, people totally think of it as that's just part of the deal. You're going to get butt raped. Think of Uncle Tom in the Boondocks. Or another pop culture reference that's
Uncle Tom,
song,
you mean Date Tom? Rape,
where that's the punchline.
His name's
the guy
Tom.
Goes to jail and then he gets butt raped.
His name's Tom, not Uncle Tom.
Well, they call him Uncle Tom though, don't they?
Well,
somebody does.
He is an Uncle Tom. That's why he's named Tom. But
yeah.
no, he's just Tom.
Okay. Well, I think of him as an Uncle Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
and, you know,
I was going to say with Stephanie, I'm curious about what her plans are with her medical practice. Does
yeah,
she have
definitely.
Any kind of different liberty stuff going on? I know when you're in school and in college, things – you don't get as good a sense of how things work in the professional world. They're usually a lot less ethical and a lot less scrupulous in real life than they tell you they are in school.
Yeah, I mean a lot of lawyers that go to school, that go to college that I've talked to. I have a few friends that are lawyers. Like, you know, going in, they thought I'll be fighting the good fight and righting wrongs, and you know, then they just end up making a buttload of money working for anybody they can, no matter how evil they are.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I remember when I went to school for journalism, and it was all like, oh, this is some great public service, and you're being the watchdog of the government and finding out what's really going on and all this sort of high-minded stuff. And then you get in the real world and it's just like, go talk to this official and say what they're saying.
You're not the watchdog of the government. You're the information arm of getting people to like the government.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, every story has to be within the narrative that already exists. So it's already the enforcement of the status quo in general, just because... And again, it is a chicken with the egg thing, or chicken before the egg thing. It's people want to see that stuff that reinforces their beliefs. So that's what the media does.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to ask her about that. I mean, I'm intrigued by the idea of anybody who's a liberty person going into a job that is so heavily entrenched with the government.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know if she's going to be a psychiatrist or a psychologist. Wait, psychologist does not have a medical degree. Psychiatrist does, right?
Psychiatrists can prescribe medicine, but
right.
psychologists can't.
Right. I know she's going to medical school. I don't know if she's also doing the psych part. But either way, I mean, being a doctor, you have a lot of government guns at your head to do it their way. And, I mean, I still don't know... You know, I think doctors are good. I don't know if I even like the idea of psychiatrists and psychologists. My limited experience with them has not been good. I actually had one that I thought was really creepy. I had a female psychologist, or an MSW, Master of Social Work, which is a therapist, who I had a crush on, and it was not a matter of just like, oh, it's a woman listening to my problems. She must like me. It was like she was flirty with me. Uh-huh. And at one point I just asked her flat out. I was like, are you attracted to me? I mean, I feel like you are. And if you are, I think I need to find a different therapist. And she wouldn't answer me. She said, well, what do you think? Which, you know, you'd expect a psychiatrist or a shrink to say for the first couple of questions. But over several different sessions, she would not answer. And it wasn't like, I don't know if that's what they make them do or what, but I really wanted her to just say yes or no. You know, if it was yes, I was going to go get a different shrink. And if it was no, I'd be like, okay, we can continue this. But it was very confusing to me, and I felt like it was handled very unprofessionally.
Yeah. I think there is a market for shrinks. I just think the angle would be a lot different without state intervention, because I think it's important. Sometimes I've been to a few shrinks, and the thing I found most helpful was just having an impartial party to talk to. You know, somebody that doesn't have a dog in the fight, somebody yeah. that's not your friend and isn't worried about losing your friendship, but somebody that you can just tell everything, you know, and is bound by honor to not pass it on or tell other people. And I think that can be a very important role to be filled. So I think there would be psychologists in LivPair. As far as modern psychiatry and prescribing people psych meds, I think that's more quackery than medicine. I think it is heavily influenced by the state and has been and has a long history of the state using things like mental disorders to throw people in gulags or lock them away, put them in institutions, lobotomize them, eugenics, all sorts of horrible things based on people not having the right mental outlook. So I think there would be some form of therapy that would remain without the state and be important, but not the way it looks now.
I agree. I mean, I think that there would even be a place for meds, but I think they'd be used about 2% as much as they're used now.
Right. And I think there'd be more of a – it'd have more of a feeling of a last resort. Like people wouldn't want to be on meds. They wouldn't seek them. Doctors wouldn't
– there wouldn't be ads for them on – I mean, there's ads for them on TV. I find that kind of creepy and weird. And also, the ads themselves are kind of creepy and weird. Sometimes there'll be an ad for a drug and it'll say, ask your doctor. And it's like – I can't tell if it's an ad for a psych med or an allergy med, you know, because it's just like someone.
It's the same stock footage of people having fun and taking baths
and like
near the beach and stuff.
Yeah, or like, you know, having a dreary day and then like the clouds part and it's sunny and they're walking through the field of flowers. And I'm like, okay, is that because they're on psych meds or because they're on allergy meds and they can now go out in the field of flowers? Like, literally, I've seen ads where I didn't know and I thought it was one or the other and looked it up and it could equally be, you know, equal chance of it being one or the other.
Right. Well, now they even have ads for the drugs that are just there as a supplement for your antidepressant. Like, you're on one antidepressant and then you have to take another drug to mitigate some of the side effects of that. There's whole sections and niches in the market that are just mitigating the side effects of your Prozac or your other antidepressant that you're on.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
It's like
yeah.
a little seasoning to go with your steak.
Exactly.
You can subscribe to Freedom Fiends via the RSS link on the top right of any page. It's orange and marked follow. Or you can subscribe via email at the subscribe by email link at the top of the right sidebar on any page. It's a little bit below the search field. You'll need to respond to a one-time confirmation email, but after that, you will only receive an email each time a new episode posts. The Freedom Fiends respect your privacy. We will not spam you and will not sell, rent, or share your email address. And you are free to unsubscribe at any time.
Which, you know, it's really great for Big Pharma. They have a whole new niche. They can design drugs that don't fix everything or that don't fix anything, but even cause the need or the demand for another drug. And because people's insurance is paying for it and because there are state subsidies that pay for it, you know, there's not an economic decision made on the part of the patients or the doctors, really. So it just becomes standard practice.
Well, another thing is a lot of times when the patent on a drug is about to expire, they can repatent it by finding a different use for it. I think Viagra was originally a heart medication and the patent was about to expire. Or no, it's the other way around. The patent on Viagra, you know, which is used as a boner pill, was about to expire, and then they found a use for it for treating some heart disease and repatented it. And I think that there are some psych meds that were originally something else and then got patented as psych meds.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know. I just feel wary of all of it. And people always look at me like my jobs always offer me insurance and I never take them. And people look at me funny and think I'm stupid. And maybe I am, you know. But I just feel like the only real medical insurance I want is something that'll pay for surgery if I get in a car accident or something. Like, I'm not the kind of person that'll go to the doctor and try to get medicine for everything. I'd rather try to eat right and be generally healthy and take
vitamins.
Well,
you can get insurance that is only for catastrophic stuff, too.
Yeah, yeah, you can. You know. Oh, and they have these new things that Republicans in different status think are a great way to not buy into the system, but they really are. When I was doing my benefits meeting at my job, they have these things called like medical savings accounts where like they don't tax you, but you put a chunk of money in, and if you don't use it all, you don't get it back. It goes away. You can only use it for the certain medical stuff. So yeah, it's not taxed, but unless you really plan well on what you're going to spend, like, oh, I'm going to break my leg in August, so I got to make sure I have $1,000 in there. So
yeah, why do Republicans like that? It's like they don't want the government telling them what to do with their money, but they want the government telling them what to do with their money, it seems like, you know?
I don't know. To me, it just seems like another tenth measure. Like they're saying, well, yeah, okay, look, you know, Obamacare people, or look, people who want healthcare reform, here's something we can do that it's a reform. You guys all want reform, so here we'll do this, and it'll sort of take government control out of it. But all it does is complicate the matters. It just adds a new layer of regulation, a new layer of confusion.
It's basically saying people aren't smart enough to manage their own business. And we need something. Yeah. And, you know, really,
how about you just don't tax any of my income? And then if I get sick, I'll have more money to pay for myself. How's that?
I think that the biggest reform that they could do, and there's a lot of reasons this doesn't happen, and this is even something that could work in the existing system. It's not a minarchist thing. It's not a libpair thing. It's not an anarchist thing. They could do this today, is allow competition for health insurance over state lines. They do not allow that. They allow that for car insurance, which is one reason car insurance has gotten cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah. Think of Geico and Progressive and everybody competing on the national level.
I don't know who's blocking this, but somebody with deep pockets is blocking this from happening.
Also, I mean, how contradictory is that for Congress, who is supposed to, I mean, as much
encourage
as I hate
interstate commerce,
the interstate commerce law, but it was written there and put there to make commerce regular, to make it to where there wouldn't be protectionism between the different states. And what is that but protectionism when you won't let an insurance company sell their insurance to another state?
They're just trying to keep the slaves on the plantation, man.
They are. I mean, yeah, haven't you seen that thing where there's a bill to keep you from leaving the country, from getting a passport or having your passport suspended if you don't pay your taxes?
Yeah.
I mean, that is some scary stuff.
So
and apparently you need a passport to go to Canada or Mexico now. I didn't realize that until recently, but my wife wants us to take a little day trip to Canada, but we can't just take a little day trip. We can't just pack the stuff up and drive a few hours up to the border. No. We have to go stand in line at wherever you have to go to get yourself a damn passport.
When I was a kid, we used to go shopping in Canada. It was like going to a different city.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it should be, right? It's just a different place.
Yeah. So that bill, it's Arizona. We talked about the bill against annoying people online. The sponsors of the bill, the state reps who are sponsoring it, called said of critics of the bill who associated it with George Orwell, called those people crackpots and conspiracy theorists.
Yeah, that's almost their go-to thing. That's their go-to thing now more than even terrorism.
You must be a crackpot. You're calling our Orwellian bill Orwellian.
I mean, is there real support for this, though? Because sometimes I feel like certain politicians just like to grandstand and get attention and get press, so they'll do really ridiculous things like this. Or is this a real thing that has a threat?
I don't know, man. I think Jan Brewer would sign it. She's kind of loony. You know, she did sign the concealed carry without a permit thing, but I think that's just so old Arizonan people could shoot brown people.
Yeah, I think that was the intention. She probably also secretly signed some bill that brown people can't buy guns.
Arizona's got some really tyrannical sociopaths, like that Sheriff Arpaio.
Joe Arpaio?
Yeah. He's probably the worst sheriff in America.
I would think so. He's mostly because he's such a evil drug warrior. Like, and he really buys his own BS too.
And an evil jailer. I mean, he tries to make the prison there really, really oppressive. I mean, to the point of like making people sleep outside in tents in 120 degree temperature and wear, you know, pink underwear to humiliate them. And
oh, it's disgusting. And what was that documentary he's in? He's in some documentary that has Tommy Chong in it too. And it's just disgusting how he treats these people that are in jail like they're subhuman. Like, he makes them all bow down to him. Like, he'll ask them something, and they have to talk about how horrible they are. And he'll make fun of them and deride their humanity and basically call them scum just because they had a substance that was different than the substance you like to enjoy. And, I mean, I've never drank a beer with Joe Arpaio, but I'm sure he's had a few drinks in his lifetime before, and I'm sure he didn't feel guilty or like he was doing something immoral.
Wow.
Tyranny yep. today,
there
every
are,
day.
There are differences in different places. I was looking at the police report, the crime report for my old neighborhood in San Francisco the other day. And I was trying to think like the last time there was a cop on my block here in Casper, and it was, as far as I know, I mean, I'm not looking out the window squinting all the time, but I am home a lot. And the last time I remember a cop on my block was a year and a half ago. My neighbor got a, like, you know, $12 worth of decorative lights stolen from his garden, and he called the cops.
it was just some punk kids playing a prank or something.
Yeah. Yeah. They stole our lights too, but we didn't call the cops. And we actually found them like around the corner stuck in somebody else's lawn. It was kind of funny. But I was looking at the square block, the crime report for the square block I used to live in San Francisco. And this is for 1 weekend. This is the police calls for 1 weekend. Attempted suicide, screaming person, 3 calls for suspicious person, one, and you'd have to be pretty suspicious on this block, you know, for someone to call the police if you live.
Yeah.
1 call for drunk driver, 2 calls for parking violations, you know, people blocking other people's driveway, 1 call for stolen vehicle, 2 calls for check on well-being of elderly, 1 call for assault and battery, 1 call for fight without weapons, 1 call for a shooting, and 1 call for a strong arm robbery. That's 1 weekend of the block I used to live on in San Francisco. And that's just the ones that people called the police for. You know, who knows what else happened.
Yeah, yeah. And this is a place, of course, where everything is heavily regulated, and there's a big police state and a big governmental presence in everybody's life. And this is what you get.
Yep.
So you get the opposite of what you're trying to go for when you have a giant – when you have so much power vested in a city government and so much power vested in people that try to rule things by force.
Yeah. This is the town where, like, not only is – you know, a lot of people are on welfare. You can't have a gun. You cannot have a gun. And let's see what else. They outlawed, like, selling pets, and they outlawed, like, Happy Meals. I mean, they're really up in your business there. But you can walk around naked in that town, which is kind of interesting.
Well, so, yeah, it's illegal to have a gun in this town. But there was a shooting on the block on the weekend. I bet there's often shootings in that area.
Yep.
And yet, where you live, you have a gun, your neighbor has a gun. Probably, I would say 90% of the people on your street have guns. Would you think that?
At least a rifle, yeah.
At least a rifle. I mean, count that.
I don't think that many people carry a gun, but I think a lot more people carry a gun here than in San Francisco, even including the violent criminals in San Francisco that carry guns.
Even if they don't carry a gun, I bet they have, you know, an old Mossberg 500 in the basement or a little 22 that they used to use for shooting squirrels.
I did not know anybody in San Francisco in 16 years of living there. I can't think of one person that I knew of that had a gun. Oh, I can. I can think of one guy. He was a cab driver, and he had a gun because he'd been robbed like 3 times. But, you know, of the hundreds of people I knew there, none of them had a gun, or at least didn't tell me. And they probably would have told me. You know, I had friends that told me all their business. They told me all the drugs they had. You know, they weren't worried about breaking the law. So, cast sunscreen.
You mean ass sunscreen?
Yeah.
No, Cass Sunstein.
Cass Sunstein, the czar of everything. What is he? The regulatory czar. Boy, that's a scary sounding position.
Yeah. Ugh. He's an Obamaite who's a scholar, supposedly, but all he seems to study is ways of socially engineering people into doing things and believing in the government and being bigger a-holes, basically, or horizontal enforcers or statists or whatever you want to call them. They're kind of interchangeable in my mind.
He's the guy who came up with the term libertarian paternalism, which is such an oxymoron that, I mean, I think that he called it that to confuse people about what libertarianism is.
Probably.
Because he is completely the opposite of libertarian. I really hate that if you search libertarian podcast on iTunes, he's like the first or second thing that comes up. Some speech he gave.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yep.
Man. Yeah, F that guy.
Read this thing in a paper.
Let's see. So this was a paper he wrote when he was administrator of the White House Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs.
In 2008. Now, isn't that before Obama was in?
Huh. Yeah, I guess so, because Obama would have been elected in fall of 2008 and wouldn't have taken power until January of 2009. So, yeah I guess he's been around the block for a while now.
But Obama loves him.
Yeah.
Obama gave him a career advancement.
Obama filled him up with some Santorum.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, he wrote, "What can government do about conspiracy theories? Among the things that it can do, what should it do? We can readily imagine a series of possible responses. 1. Government might ban conspiracy theorizing."
Ban,
he says.
And that, it sounds like that, he's not even talking about just banning, like, printing them or putting them on the internet, but he's talking about even theorizing.
He's,
like,
he's banning thought. He's calling it thought crime.
Yeah.
And he says it, like, without any fanfare. It's so anticlimactic. Like, this is just something that we can think of in the government, and it shall be done.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like this is just, you know, something he wrote as part of his 40-hour-a-week job. Just, you know, the 3 hours on Friday, he came up with this list.
Just brainstorming new ways to terrorize and tyrannize the populace. So, 2, government might impose some kind of tax, financial or otherwise, on those who disseminate such theories. What does he mean by otherwise?
That's just outrageous.
I'm really curious now. I want to ask Cass. Maybe I should interview Cass for a Freedom Fiend solo joint.
I'll bet he would like the idea that you would need a license to blog.
Oh, he'd love it. Well, he'd love the idea of taxing everybody who says anything about the government. I mean, think about the chilling effect. You ran out of money. You can't talk crap about the government anymore. Sorry, buddy. Wait till you get a new paycheck, and then you can go blog post up.
Sorry, buddy.
Yeah, and I'm really curious. What does he mean? How are you going to tax somebody other than financially? Is he talking about, like, going to see the pain monster, like in Futurama?
I'm thinking, like, requiring a license. That's an otherwise tax.
I think it could be more sinister than that, coming from Cass Sunstein.
This guy was instrumental in writing the Obamacare bill, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure he was. And probably thinking of ways to make sure it's enforced, you know.
And, you know, now they're going after – they're trying to outlaw – the EPA is trying, again, to outlaw lead ammunition to protect bald eagles. Now, they tried before to outlaw it in general, but now they're trying to do it, and it did not work. And now they're trying to do it for bald eagles, which, you know, I'm thinking they're trying to get the Republicans behind them because it's the symbol of America. What is that word? Charismatic megafauna, you know. Where they try to protect a whole ecosystem by making one fluffy, you know, the pandas or the polar bears, making it the symbol.
Because,
you know, they really want to protect the itchy algae, but no one cares about the itchy algae, so they say it's for the polar bears. Yeah, I'm wondering if, like, that was one of his things that he came up with on a Thursday morning of, like, hey, you know, here's how we could get rid of guns. We can't get rid of guns, but we could get rid of lead bullets, which is the best thing to make bullets out of, by just saying that they hurt bald eagles.
Yeah. I don't think they could stop it, though. I mean, first of all, it's not that hard to find bullets that aren't lead. Second of all, I mean, if you know how to hand load, it can't be that hard to make your own lead bullets, right?
No, and people make them out of old car batteries. They have a lot of lead in them.
Yeah, yeah. So, you statists can try all you want, but you're just farting in the wind. Eventually, we're all just going to laugh at you, and then you'll be a laughingstock, like in L. Neil Smith graphic novels, hopefully.
Well, you know, I'm thinking he would consider everything we say conspiracy theory, too. Like, I mean, you know, when I think conspiracy theory, I think of, you know, chemtrails or, you know, birtherism or trutherism or whatever. But I think he would even say that, like, the non-aggression principle or the idea that government exists at the barrel of a gun, he would probably consider that a conspiracy theory too.
He probably would, but he'd have a pretty indefensible position. I mean, because in order for something to be a conspiracy theory, you have to imagine that certain groups of people are conspiring to do something.
We're not even through his list here. We're so conspiratorial about it. So that was number two. Government might impose some kind of type of pain monster or tax for those who disseminate such theories. Right. Number three.
Number three has been happening since governments existed. And I don't know why he included this because it's so obvious. But number three is government might itself engage in counter speech, marshaling arguments to discredit conspiracy theories.
Now, we talked about that last week or recently, and that was the only one I've heard of his list until I found this other list. And he said that the problem with that would be, you know, he's basically saying, like, hire bloggers and commenters with tax money to sit around on the internet all day and post counter theories to the conspiracy theories. And he said that it was a fine balance between, you know, the idea was to try to counter the theories in the public's imagination, but it would be a fine line to do it in a way that A, it couldn't get discovered, which would discredit the whole effort, and B, to not seem crackpot on themselves.
Right, right.
To seem credible.
Well, I kind of feel like this has always been the strategy of governments, is they push their own narrative. And when somebody calls them out on something, they just push it harder. And it was a lot easier for them in the past because they had things like newspapers that were beholden to them, and they were very much in control of most media, so with licensing and stuff.
You know what COINTELPRO was, right?
Wasn't it a CIA operation to make sure that the American populace was on board with everything?
Yeah, I mean, it was in the 60s. One of the ways it came out was in the 60s. They would have CIA operatives grow their hair long and go to nonviolent protests, like anti-war protests, and start violence. So the whole thing could be discredited.
Right, right. Which, I mean, they still do today with things like the Occupy movement. And there was some guy I was listening to on anti-war radio the other day who wrote a report about how involved the Homeland Security Department was with cracking down on the Occupy movement and having agents and spending tax money on putting people in Occupy locations. And so this is something that they've been doing for a while, and I think they'll continue to do it. Also, how commie-sounding is COINTELPRO? I mean, it sounds like a common turn to me.
Well, it sounds like something from 1984 or Brave New World.
Yeah, yeah. What is it with statists like and fascists always wanting to smoosh words together?
Newspeak.
I don't get it.
Because they think that they're being more efficient when really they're just this amoeba cancer that devours all the money and property and everything. But they're pretending to be. You know, that's another, like, have you heard about that that seminar that was a big waste of money in Las Vegas recently that was outed in all the left and right news?
Was that the one with like the $15 muffins?
Yeah, that was an older one. This is a new one that was like, and I forget the name of the agency. I'd never even heard of them, but apparently they're the agency in charge of making sure the government doesn't waste money.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And the guy who won like best video or whatever, because they did a YouTube video contest, did a rap about how he spent all day doing nothing and he was never going to get investigated.
I don't know about that, but this was, I mean, they spent like $850,000 on this seminar, and they printed up all these ridiculous things like canteens for everybody, and the best part was commemorative coins. And John Stewart's take on it was pretty funny. He said, so they spent $27,000 printing fake money to commemorate their wasting of real money. But, you know, and like Obama's like, this must be scaled back. You know, he's making a big thing about it. And I'm like, that's a drop in a drop in a drop in the bucket, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Which they love stuff like that because it can make, you know, somebody like Barack Obama or Mitt Romney can grandstand on it and say, you know, we're going to cut all of this wasteful stuff. And then they have something to point to that say, oh, yeah, well, we got rid of this department. Well, they'll never get rid of it.
You know, it's just like when
we cleaned this up and then people don't see the real picture.
Right. It's like when a cop is particularly bad. Cops in general will stick up for other cops, but when a cop is just so bad they can't do anything with him, they will throw him under the bus like so fast. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Because it makes it look like, okay, we've solved the problem. We got rid of the bad cop.
Right, right. And then they look like the good guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when they find the kitty toucher cop, they'll fire him and throw him in prison for a while.
Yep, yep.
But, you know, they don't do anything about the cops that shoot people all day or kidnap people for having medicine or
hell,
whatever.
Even tickets. I mean, I remember Sheriff, who was the
Richard
sheriff?
Mack.
Yeah, Sheriff Mack in our movie. He was going off on cops who spend all day sitting around giving people tickets because it's unconstitutional. You're taxing people for no reason. You're basically a tax collector.
Yeah, which was kind of surprising to me. I really liked it. I mean, his whole thing is trying to reform cops, which, God bless him. You know, he's an ex-sheriff, and he's actually running for office now. I forget where. I think he's running against Sheriff Arpaio.
I thought you were telling me it was somewhere Arpaio. In Texas.
Oh, maybe he's running for... Yeah, that's right. He's running for congressman in Texas, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, I liked his take on the thing. He said, you know, cops who give tickets all day are violating the Eighth Amendment. It's cruel and unusual punishment to sit around and be a tax collector for people using the roads.
And it really is. And people who scoff at that, just try to put yourself in the shoes of somebody who's maybe a university student, has to pay out the butt for tuition, you know, is putting themselves into debt because the government has subsidized education so much that it's $20,000 a year or whatever. And you know, has to spend so much time at school that they can only work 20, 30 hours a week. I mean, getting a ticket for $250 or getting two tickets because you paid $250 and then the cop wants to write you a second ticket just so he can kill two birds with one stone and says, oh, well, your inspection's out or your taillight's out or whatever. I'm going to write you a ticket for that. I mean, $500 in 1 month, that's a big chunk of your change when you're a broke student or even just somebody making minimum wage who's not a student, somebody who has kids. That's a lot of your money. You have to decide between eating and going to court and paying some cop so he can get his quota and get his fat government check.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast. Freedom Fiends is now available for 24/7 streaming to your iPhone, Android phone, or other chromed robot turd. Click on the streaming audio link on freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
You know, Fox News was bitching the other day about students in California, college students, having demonstrations that I guess turned violent about their tuition going up. And I'm thinking, like, I think that's a valid complaint, man. When the state is stealing everything from you and you're trying to get an education so you can work within the state better, you know, it's not like everything's free. Everything's taken from people.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. And the thing I think when I think about it is, you know, tuition goes up when the subsidies go up. So the government is really regulating. There's a level of price control going on there. So whenever they up the price they're willing to pay students to go to school, all schools do is raise their price to meet that need because that's how economics works. If the government's going to subsidize something, the price is going to go up to that level where the subsidy's at. If the government says, well, we're going to give everybody $8 a day to buy a burger, then every McDonald's burger is going to be at least $8 because everybody will have that $8 to spend on the burger.
And we still haven't gotten through this list of suggestions that Cass Sunscreen came up with on a Friday afternoon of how to regulate free speech.
All right, number four. Government might formally hire credible private parties to engage in counter speech.
Can Can you imagine that? Can you imagine, like, if you were on Alex Jones's website and he was required by law to have these little pop-ups of government experts like arguing with what he's saying? Would that have any credibility?
No, of course not. See, they already do it, and it has more credibility with most people now than it did then. I mean, you remember when before the lead-up to the Iraq War, everybody on TV was a formal general, retired general, that had been trained by the CIA and by the Pentagon to say the right things and hit the right talking points. And
well, you know, there was a suggestion that came from the Obama administration, and reading this thing from Cass Sunscreen, I'm thinking that it must have come from him. It's so his kind of thought policing.
Uh-huh.
There was some thought somewhere I heard of, probably on some conspiracy website. No, it was on some mainstream site of the Obama administration suggesting the possibility of requiring by law that on any website that says negative things about the government, that they allow space, that they provide space on that website for a contrary view.
Right.
Can you imagine that? Like, the Freedom Fiends would have to have, you know, every hour we'd have to have 5 minutes of Cass Sunstein's libertarian paternalism speech or something.
Yeah. Well, that's a throwback to the old FCC days. They tried that out for a while, where if you, on TV or in a news program, gave one side a certain amount of time, you were required to give the opposing side.
Well, yeah, so it wouldn't be 5 minutes an hour, it'd be an hour for every hour.
Well, it didn't work because of that, because of the time constraints. And also,
and here's what,
how ridiculous is that? I mean, that's so black and white. There's always more than two positions
Say that if that's how it's going to be, it's not for every hour of Republicans, you have to have an hour of Democrats. I'd say for every hour of Republicans and Democrats, you should have to have an hour of anarchists.
Yeah, because that's where the real split is.
Yeah,
but of course, how ridiculous is this kind of equal time provisions? Because who gets to decide who's on the other side? I mean, how do you decide what the opposite of a Republican is? Because we, like you said, would consider the opposite of a Republican somebody like us, who's an anarchist, whereas somebody in the mainstream world would think of it as somebody like Obama, who's pretty much the same thing in our book.
Yeah.
So, number five. Government might engage in informal communication with such parties, encouraging them to help. Each instrument has a distinctive set of potential effects or costs and benefits, and each will have a place under imaginable conditions. However, our main policy idea is that government should engage in cognitive infiltration of the groups that produce conspiracy theories, which involves a mix of 3, 4, and 5.
Three being, counter speech to discredit theories.
Counter speech, 4 being hiring people, and 5, which is itself. So,
You know what's interesting about this to me is government has gotten to the point. I mean, there were times most of my life, this would have been a top secret internal memo. This was published on a website somewhere. This is not secret.
Right.
You know, it's like they're not even trying anymore to cover up the fact that they're spending vast amounts of our money to lie to us and considering 5 different ways to lie to us and deciding that the best way to lie to us is a mixture of 3 of these 5 ways to lie to us.
Right. And this is the phrase that really gets me: engage in cognitive infiltration. The government literally wants to invade your brain.
And admits it.
Yeah, and admits it. And tries to write policy papers on how to do it most effectively.
How can anybody take these clowns seriously? I guess because they...
Because they've been cognitively infiltrated, Michael.
Well, and also they point guns at everyone's head and, you know, just went out and bought 40 million Glock bullets to arm everybody who's not already armed who works for the government.
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of the thing, too, is people do seek out their self-interest, and they take the path of least resistance. And so, you know, a lot of people just want to be Joe Schmo clocking in their 9-to-5, living in their McMansion, driving their SUV with their 2.5 kids and their blonde wife who's on Prozac. I mean, that's the American dream. Oh, and that does not include freedom fighting. That does not include hating the government. That includes going to PTA meetings and voting for Mitt Romney or Barack Obama or whoever is your flavor of state.
Yeah. Let's take a break.
Yeah.
I need one after that. So, Nima, on the Sunday cast, I want to talk about the boiling frog a bit. And, and a related thing, which you were talking about on the Sunday cast, you brought up, you know, what would happen if there was LibPair? You know, what would we do with all this energy we use to fight the state and yell at the state and and create conspiracy theories that piss off ass sunscreen?
We're just trying to defend your brain from the cognitive infiltration.
Yeah. And you made a joke about, like, well, I wouldn't know what to do. I live for this stuff. And I live for this stuff. But I think we'd know what to do, and we would have better lives. You know, it's kind of like if you live in a flood zone or, you know, a tornado zone, and you spend all your time putting sandbags in front of your house, what would you do if the tornadoes stopped and you didn't have to constantly put sandbags in front of your house? You'd have more money, you'd have more time, you'd have more energy, you'd have more serenity. You know, you'd run a business and run it better. You know, what would we do? We'd probably make a lot more music, for one thing. I don't know.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. I guess I was sort of engaging in a little bit of the broken window fallacy when I was pondering that, because, it's not like I have a better life because I spend all my energy complaining about the state. If I didn't have to spend my energy complaining about the state, you're right. I'd make more music. I'd spend more time with my wife, as she yelled at me when I said that. You know, I'd put my efforts into pursuits that were a bit more entrepreneurial, and things would be better.
Well, and if we couldn't get the state bug out of our craw, we'd probably make history films and history books and history podcasts to teach the children about how it used to be so they'd know not to go back there.
Ah.
You know?
That's another really important point. It's not like we get to LibPair and that's the end of it, because there's always the threat looming that it could happen again.
Hitler's gone and the Holocaust is over. Does that mean no one should ever speak of it again?
Of course not. No, no. Just like with slavery. I mean, why do we all as adults now detest slavery? It's because we've learned about it throughout our lives, that people were owned and whipped.
Well, I don't understand why people can't see the historical corollaries of that we're in soft slavery now, and all politicians are basically acting like Hitler, but just slower and more gentle at this point.
I really liked the answer that Stefan Molyneux gave you when you interviewed him. When you guys were talking about, you have a neighbor who works with the sanitation department hauling trash or whatever, and you try to explain these things to him. And Molyneux was saying, well, think about it. He won't let the dominoes start to fall in his brain because everything in his life is so tied to it. And so if he even it's sort of his subconscious protecting his conscious from going that far, because then he would have to renounce his economic well-being, his family, his friends, and the whole system he's grown his whole life around would collapse.
I would think a sanitation worker wouldn't have that much problem with it, because in LibPair, you'd certainly still need your trash hauled. You would not need cops to kick in doors and bust people's heads for smoking weed. So I would think I could see how cops or, you know, a lot of soldiers, we have way more soldiers than we need to protect ourselves. Most of what they're doing, or almost all of what they're doing, is not protecting us from anything and is actually stirring the pot more and causing more problems. There's a lot of jobs that I could see people would cling to their statism because their jobs wouldn't exist in LibPair. But hey, garbage needs hauling throughout history, you know?
Right, but not in the way it works now. And if he has to make the connection that every one of my paychecks is ill-gotten, there's a level of cognitive dissonance there. If he believes all of a sudden that taxation is theft, then he has to believe that he's a thief.
Well, I actually think that the state could be ended in a nonviolent way and all existing contracts could still be honored. You know, okay, tomorrow all the cops don't come into work anymore. Your job no longer exists, but they could still get their pension because the state owns a lot of crap that could be auctioned off. You know, think about all the land they've stolen. They could just say, okay, here's your pension, 2,000 acres in prime Montana. Take it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, here, I guess you would like, have to work something out like
here's,
that.
Here's a pension for the...
You'd have to have a big caveat of which contracts were valid and not, because there are some supposed things like social contracts, or there are contracts where the government promised money it didn't have. I mean, there's a lot of contracts I'm sure the government has signed that we would consider invalid in LibPair.
Yeah, but the government could still honor all of them. They could not honor them going forward. They couldn't say, well, everyone's going to still get subsidies and welfare forever just because it's that way now. But they could honor pensions, I believe. And, I mean, that'd be a big one, is pensions and pensions of the people, you know, Social Security, things like that. That could be honored. The government owns everything. The government owns so much, man.
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, if you've seen that map where it shows percentage of government-owned land, and everything pretty much west of the Mississippi is like 50 to 80% owned by the government. I mean, they literally own like more than half of Nevada, more than half of Wyoming.
The interesting thing to me is the states that I consider the most free to live in also happen to be the ones that the federal government owns the largest percentage of. I think that there might be a connection even, because the federal government tends to own things and do nothing with them, just to own them. So I think that the federal government owns a lot of land out in my part of the country, and it just basically means no people can live there. So there's less people. So there's less,
Government.
Less government. Yeah.
No, I totally buy that correlation. I mean, there's much less of an economy because there's much less land that you're free to do what you wish with it. And the argument's been made that the better your economy gets, the bigger your government will eventually be, because then tax revenues go higher, so there's more government, so the government taxes you more, and it just sort of bubbles itself up until it pops and collapses.
And you know, some of the state land here, I mean, not to venerate the state, but just kind of something I've noticed about it is some of the freest I've ever felt in my life is on land owned by the state of Wyoming. Like where we go out shooting.
Yeah.
I love it out there.
Yeah.
I love it out there.
Although isn't that technically BLM land?
Is that federal?
BLM is federal, yeah. Bureau of Land Management.
I think that that land where we shoot is owned by Wyoming, not by D.C.
Okay. Well, it gets so convoluted to where sometimes it's like owned by the
one
government
agency,
but they lease it to the state, which then leases it to ranchers.
I know. Or like, you know, one part of the government owns something and will lease it to another part of the government and get paid for it.
Yeah.
Of the same
so
government.
It's just parasites trading blood back and forth in an evil French kiss.
Ew. Kinky.
Kinky. You like that, don't you, Michael?
And people think my idea of sexuality is perverse.
Yeah, everybody's is in a certain way. I mean, I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe I'm just young.
Well,
you're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast. Freedom Fiends is now available for 24/7 streaming to your iPhone, Android phone, or other chromed robot turd. Click on the streaming audio link on freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
The thing about BDSM is that a lot of people don't even know what that means. They think, if they have any opinion of what it means, they think it means, you know, tying someone up and whipping them until they bleed. Really, BDSM would, I think, involves nearly a majority of sexuality.
Every girl I've been with has gotten off sometimes when I'm really demanding,
rough,
dominating, yeah, and talking dirty, like, yeah, yeah, you're a effing slut, you know, things like that.
Yeah. Oh, I have to write that one down.
All right. I don't know. Maybe it's just my generation. I just feel like most of the girls I've been with tend to like that kind of thing. Maybe not all the time, and maybe not to different extremes, but
basically BDSM in its widest definition would include anything where someone's telling someone else what to do, and they're allowing it, you know, voluntarily.
Yeah.
I mean, it is voluntary. You know, it's not raping people. It's safe, sane, and consensual, which, you know, can on the most extreme level, it would be, you know, bull whipping someone till they bleed naked in a room full of strangers. And people like that. And at the mildest, it would be, you know, hands at your side, let me drive.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So either way, but I really like the point you made that whatever gets your boat, and this is that we shouldn't be treating it like people treated homosexuality 100 years ago.
I know, because basically it's saying, you know, if it's not BDSM, it's vanilla, which is, you know, missionary style, man on top, woman on bottom, facing each other, procreating for babies. You know, if it's not that, it's probably got a little bit of a kink in it. And right. I don't know about, I mean, I haven't surveyed a, you know, 1,000 people out of the phone book. Maybe I should. Hi, I'm your neighbor, and I'd like to know what you do in bed.
Yeah.
But, you know, I slept with about 170 women, and I can't think of one that didn't like getting, you know, spanked a little bit.
Or thrown around a little bit.
Like a rag doll, yeah. And, you know, they liked it.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, the ones that didn't, I didn't do that with, but I probably didn't see them much again after. I don't know. I've had some good vanilla missionary-style sex in my day.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I guess the largest point and the largest takeaway from it, though, is society shouldn't be in the habit of judging what people do behind closed doors consensually.
I'm just surprised that three kind of movers and shakers in the liberty movement, I've heard them on their show say, you know, oh, BDSM, that's indicative of childhood abuse, and, you know, and maybe gone beyond saying that, of something to the effect of, like, I think that's bad, or that needs to be dealt with.
Here's another point. Even if it is, even if you could prove that for some reason there were a higher percentage of people into kink and BDSM that had been abused as a child, that doesn't say anything to me. That doesn't say it's wrong. If that's how you play out your life, everybody plays out their life, especially their sex life, based on past experiences and their first impressions of sex, no matter who you are. So if you were abused as a child and you go do BDSM, big deal. I mean, who cares why you're doing it? Who cares if you are doing it? Nobody should care.
I mean, I've heard all kinds of attempts to analyze why people do things. I've heard Christians say that that vanity makes people homosexual because they're trying to sleep with themselves.
Right.
What an outrageous claim, man. You know? And I really think that a lot of people who are into kink are wired that way. They're born that way in the same way that someone who is gay is born gay. And I've talked to people who are gay who don't get that about BDSM. They think, oh, there's something wrong with it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's weird. It's weird. It seems like a kind of prejudice to me. And it seems often based on Hollywood movie representations of it. And you know, if you watch Status Victim Stories or CSI, you know, whenever kink is mentioned, it's almost always in the guise of a serial rapist and murderer and torturer. Mm-hmm. And I will say CSI had a recurring character named Lady Heather, who was a pro-dominant, which, first of all, I mean, pro, that's kind of putting some other weird thing into it. It's like, we're not talking consensual, like married couple or something. We're talking about someone paying someone to do something to them. But
yeah,
she was also a dominant in her life, in her personal life. And they had her on for 3 or 4 episodes over a period of about 6 months. And she was a really sane, really intelligent, really good character. And then they had her like flay someone to death with a whip as revenge, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing is, if you are born with it and you have these desires, how much better is it for society for you to act them out consensually with a sex partner than repress them and turn out being Rick Santorum?
I know.
I mean, I feel like that's what happens. If you repress your sexual desires, especially if that desire is to dominate, then you're more likely to act those pressures or those instincts out in other arenas. The biggest arena in public life for that is to be a politician and dominate other people, which actually hurts people because then it's not consensual.
Well, I had a friend that was a pro-dominatrix. Let's see, can I talk about this? I guess I can. She's kind of famous. Her name was I won't say her real name. She was a friend of mine from San Francisco, and we used to mess around and like, we never did it, but you know, we used to play naked in bed sometimes. It was fun. And I'm a dominant, I'm not a submissive. So it was kind of interesting when we were in bed. It was kind of like we'd kind of push each other around a little bit. In a loving way. And she's a good friend of mine. That only happened a couple times, but she's a good friend, was a good friend of mine. I haven't talked to her in years. She worked in LA, ran the largest pro dungeon there. Her name, she went under the name of Mistress Ilsa Strix, which is actually the name of some dame in a fantasy book from like the 60s that was about like a Nazi domination thing or something. But she's not a Nazi, is not a Nazi, but she kind of took on the persona of it. She's really tall and blonde and very German looking. She ran this dungeon, and she ended up, one of her clients was one of the guys that wrote The Matrix, one of the brothers that wrote The Matrix.
Ah, cool.
And she ended up giving up her dungeon and moving to Australia with him and marrying him. And then he had a sex change and became a woman, I guess, or something. And that was like big nerd news for a while. I mean, like all the tech magazines wrote about it, because it was like, oh, The Matrix and domination and sex changes. And it was, you know, and it was in Rolling Stone magazine and a whole bunch of other places. And I looked for it the other day and it's gone. It's scrubbed from the internet, man. It's only on like blogs I've never heard of. Like somebody paid somebody somehow to get that all off the internet.
Hmm. Yeah, I was completely unaware of all that stuff. Crazy. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I have a theory that Lady Heather in CSI is possibly based on this friend of mine, because in the story, this woman runs a really high dollar, really professional dame dungeon, legal, you know, by the books, pays taxes, like takes credit cards, you know, really respectable, where a lot of politicians go. That's what brought this up.
Yeah.
And I don't know that Mistress Ilsa catered to politicians, but she did cater to a lot of powerful rich men. And there is a thing of like people who are powerful in their daily life often like to be,
submissive
in the bedroom. Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
So you think Santorum pays some lady to whip his weenie, step on his junk with high heels?
He's got to do something creepy, man. I have no idea what it is, but
run for office.
I don't know, and I don't really want to think about it, because, like I say, whenever I imagine the guy's face, I just want to stomp on it with my jackboot. Just because I know that's what he wants to do to me. It's a preemptive self-defense. Not that I would ever do anything violent to anybody, but
if you want a picture of the future under Rick Santorum, imagine a spiked heel squishing your balls forever.
Yeah, yeah, with the Book of Leviticus written in the bottom of the jackboot.
Not in a good way.
Yeah,
I think that's as good a place as any to end, man. Unless you got something to top all that crap.
No, I think that'll do it. I'm just glad he dropped out. That's our freedom fix. F.U. Santorum.
He's a worm. All right, man. Worms.
Peace.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. bloodstream. I owe me, and that includes endorphins. No one won't ask permission, and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Sharealike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends, make copies, email it to everyone you know, go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every week, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.